This is a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
You're tuned into R1 News at 1. Every weekday from 1 till 2 p.m, our dedicated news team brings you the hard-hitting stories, interviews and culture pieces from across Aotearoa Dunedin.
Welcome back to R1 News at 1. Today is Thursday the 8th of August and I am your host today, Charlie. And on today's show, we had the bulletin plus an interview with Daniel Benson-Gu, who is the Assistant National Secretary at the Tertiary Education Union. And he's going to be talking to us about current reform that is going on at Te Pukenga. And up next for you, I have Night After Night by Frank on Tap, and then we'll be getting into the bulletin.
Thinking of a still love.
By golly! Get it on, mate!
Here are the R1 News at 1 headlines.
This is the R1 News Bulletin for Thursday, 8th of August. I'm Charlie. Young Kiwis are the most affected by current rising unemployment rates, One News reports. There's been a growing rise in unemployment in New Zealand, and the youngest Kiwis have been hit the hardest. According to Stats NZ, unemployment has risen from 4.4% to 4.6% this quarter. Around half of New Zealand's annual growth in unemployment and the underutilisation is comprised of young people. This is backed up by the unemployment rate for those aged between 15 and 19, rising from 15.1% to 20.7% this quarter. The unemployment rate for those between 20 and 24 also significantly increased this quarter, rising from 5.8% to 8%. Over the past year, the proportion of young people not employed, enrolled in education, or undertaken training has risen from 11.7% to 12.8%. New Zealand is now also experiencing the highest number of people out of work since March 2021, increasing from 33,000 to 143,000. Deb Brunning, Stats NZ Labour Market Manager, said, quote, young people accounted for almost half the increase in unemployment and underutilisation between June 2023 and June 2024 quarters. Over the past year, Stats NZ research has concluded that unemployment for people aged between 15 and 24 rose by 14,400 and underutilisation rose by 29,300, a number that has not been seasonally adjusted. Underutilisation is a broad measure of untapped labour market capacity that includes the unemployed and underemployed and the potential labour force. Unemployment has been increasing since 2022, leaving the current quarter's unemployment rate the highest since March 2021, Brunning added. The seasonally adjusted underutilisation rate was 11.8% in the June 2024 quarter, up from 11.2% last quarter and 9.9% a year ago. Over the year, the total number of underutilised people rose from 66,000 to 377,000. Kaipara District Council becomes the first to disestablish its Māori ward, Susan Botting of Local Democracy Reporting reports. Kaipara District Council has voted to disestablish its Māori ward, becoming the first council in New Zealand to do so under new rules. In a, quote, very tense council meeting, the councillors voted 6-3 to disestablish the Tamawana Nui or Kaipara Māori ward. As the decision was announced, protesters outside the venue erupted in haka and banged on the meeting venue walls. Kaipara Mayor Craig Jepson, Deputy Mayor Jonathan Larson, and councillors Gordon Lambeth, Mike Howard, Ron Mardison and Ash Nair voted to remove the council's ward ahead of the local elections in October 2025. Māori ward councillor Pera Pani Aura and councillors Mark Vincent and Aaron Wilson-Collins voted against the ward's removal. Councillor Rachel Williams abstained from voting against the council's removal of the ward. Mia Jepson was elated at the decision, and he hoped this could cause a wave across other councils in New Zealand and that Kaipara could now move forward constructively. Quote, I reject the notion that Māori must have a designated ward to ensure representation. The establishment and need for Māori ward relies on a false narrative, Jepson said. Children's Minister compares Oranga Tamariki to a cash cow, angering the Public Service Association, One News reports. Minister for Children Karen Chua has sparked controversy by labelling Oranga Tamariki as a cash cow for external community service providers, who she claims are failing to deliver on their commitments. Chua, an abuse survivor who spent time in care as a child, has called for a thorough review of the contracts with these service providers, who she says are worth over $500 million. Quote, for too many years, Oranga Tamariki has been the cash cow for community services who say they'll provide services and then don't. there has been no reduction in frontline services. Oranga Tamariki is simply funding those who do the work, and not those who don't, end quote. Chua emphasised that protecting children in care remains a top priority, and assured that frontline services will not be compromised, quote. Oranga Tamariki's service providers are expected to regularly report back about the work they do and the children in care they work with. The funding they provide is for the care and protection of children in state care, nothing more, nothing less, end quote. The Public Service Association has condemned Chua's remarks, describing them as offensive and demanding a retraction. Quote, it is inappropriate and wrong for a cabinet minister to describe valued community providers in such an inflammatory and disrespectful way, said PSA Assistant Secretary Melissa Woolley. Woolley challenged Chua to provide evidence of her claims regarding financial mismanagement within Oranga Tamariki. Quote, if she has evidence of this, she must be transparent about this, including to the Auditor General, end quote. This has been the Bulletin for Thursday, 8th of August. Today's Bulletin was written by Charlie Cunningham and read to you by Charlie Cunningham.
Those were the headlines for today on R1 News at 1. Catch up on previous R1 News wherever you get your podcasts or head to r1.co.nz/news.
Remember to stick around for 1:30 for our interview with Daniel Benson-Goo, the Assistant National Secretary at the Tertiary Education Union. And up next for you, we have Ghost Baby by the Coolies. Welcome back to R1 News at 1. The Polytechnics of Aotearoa have been undergoing a tumultuous time. Te Pukenga is in the process of being decentralised, a policy National campaigned on entering Parliament last year due to not being financially sustainable. Last month, the Tertiary Education Commission ordered Te Pukenga to hire independent consultants to cut costs in the face of deficits. And just last week, Tertiary Education and Skills Minister Penny Simmons unveiled her reform plans that would see the strongest polytech stand alone and the weakest form into a federation, recommending the distance learning open polytechnics be the anchor institution for these. We now welcome Daniel Benson-Goo, Assistant National Secretary in Industrial at the Tertiary Education Union. The TEU represents the staff across tertiary education institutions working to address issues affecting staff in order to defend and promote quality tertiary education that is accessible to all. Welcome to the show, Daniel.
Kia ora, Charlie. Good to be back on the airwaves.
Nice to have you. For our first question, how do you foresee the proposed cost-cutting measures affecting the quality of education at polytechnics?
It's a good question, and it actually comes with a bit of irony attached, which is that just this week, Te Pukenga announced its annual report over the last 12 months, and it actually has come out with a positive surplus of $30 million. And so, in a sense, the government is going to make these changes at a time when Te Pukenga may start to go towards a path of sustainability. Of course, this government is dead set focused on cost cutting, and any cuts to costs, any change in provision will always affect the quality of the student experience, because it affects staff. As a union, we've always said that students' learning conditions are staff working conditions. And when staff are anxious yet again about their futures, even though they do their best to make sure that that doesn't translate to the experience in the classroom, some of it does flow through.
Thank you. And what measures are being taken to ensure that educational standards are maintained or improve during and after the reform processes?
I'd say that educational standards are really the focus of our members, who are the educationalists in the sector. No matter what happens and what has happened over the last 4 or 5 years with continuous reform and what we've known as polytechnics, but the quality has still been there. And it really only comes because staff care so much about the educational experience. Now, I am really worried about this new reform process that's being set out, because I'm not convinced, personally, we're not convinced as a union that what is being proposed is in any way going to improve standards. And the proposal does very little in talking about academic or educational quality. It's just focused on what's sustainable and viable. The reality is sometimes you need to put money into things, and education, health, housing are areas you're always going to put money in. So it really comes as concern that this focus on cost cutting is going to come at the expense of that standard that you're talking about.
Thank you. Next question. Does the government's immediate decisions and cost-cutting balance with long-term sustainability and growth of the vocational education sector?
I don't think it does. Right now, we've seen that the sector has been utilised as a political football between either Labor or National. And cost-cutting isn't, again, going to improve that experience. What the future is of the vocational education sector, what that long-term vision is, one of the issues is that it's in dispute. We've got the two different potential leader parties in government who have a different view of the sector. And so what would be ideal is actually to achieve an understanding of what is needed. As a union, we've always said that we want to keep training local, quality and public, and that should be in the interest of all of us. Right now, cost cutting isn't going to necessarily lead to growth unless it leads to a growth elsewhere. That can either come from student numbers, it may come from international students, it may come from fees. The growth isn't coming from the government books, and that's one of the issues really at play.
Thank you, very insightful. Given Te Pukanga's current deficit, how realistic are the government's financial targets for the reforms?
As I just said at the start of the interview, and it really has only just come out, it's not quite a deficit anymore. And it's I'm going to put a little asterisk on it because, ironically, again, both the polytechnic side and the industry training side presented a deficit, but the assets that they hold have been valued much better. And so the value of those assets has pushed up a small surplus of $30 million. The financial targets for these reforms are just are focused on finding other ways to conduct delivery. We're concerned that there may be asset sales. Now, those assets are what are keeping Te Pukanga profitable, but it could be that there's $130 million worth of asset sales that this government will enforce on Te Pukanga. We're concerned as a union that these asset sales may come, especially within regional areas. And we've heard suggestions from the minister that it could be that for regional classes that they may be delivered in halls in Marae. Now, that's a great concept, but that's not necessarily the best place for education all the time, right? And also, we're talking about a wide breadth of education. You're not going to have the carpentry students in a hall somewhere in the middle of the Wop-Wops, right? So, you know, there's some things there that don't quite make sense out of this proposal. But also one of the biggest problems with it is that there's a lot that isn't in the proposal. So we don't know who's successful and unsuccessful. We don't know who may be part of a standalone or a federated model. And we actually don't know what that list of assets may be that could be sold. So we are currently, as a union, trying to figure out all those questions because surely that should be key to the consultation.
Yeah. Is the TEC's instruction to Te Pukanga to hire individual consultants justified during this budget reshuffle?
I think that what's happened here is there's been two separate messages that have come out to Te Pukanga, one from the TEC and one from the minister. And it feels like the right hand isn't talking to the left hand, and that is concerning. It's quite awkward that within the last couple of weeks, consultants have been put in place to identify all the areas where Te Pukanga may be sustainable, and that work isn't going to finish for the next 4 weeks when we've got a consultation that's just begun. And as a union, we've previously said over the last few weeks that surely you'd wait for that work of the consultants to end before starting the review. And what's also happened with these consultants is the TEC forced Te Pukanga under the Education Act to not hire one or two, but actually four consultant companies to look at the affairs of Te Pukanga, and that Te Pukanga should pay for it. And that's quite a burden for an institution where right now we're going, are you sustainable or not? How are your finances? half the finances seem to be going elsewhere because they're forced to go elsewhere.
Thank you. So what is the TEU's long-term vision for the polytechnic sector in New Zealand, and how do these reforms align with that vision?
The short answer is these reforms don't appear to align with that vision, because for us, we want to ensure that vocational education is kept public, local, and of good quality. All of those are at risk at the moment. While there's no doubt that the government continues to see this sector as forming part of a public education sector, and that's undoubtedly a good thing, and we should applaud the government where they've made a right decision. It may come at that increased cost to students, for example, or it may come with asset sales in order to pay for it. We want to make sure that industry and communities, Māori, Pacifica, are included within what's considered as necessary for vocational education and training. And often industry, communities and staff and students are not the ones who are making the decision here. Right now, this proposal is more about money than it is about who this would benefit. And at the same time, I guess we can say that we've got ongoing need and skill shortages in a whole range of areas, and they come up time and time again. We need more nurses, we may need physios, we may need builders, because, you know, we want to, you know, get that hospital in Dunedin built. But that comes from somewhere, and it comes from the polytechnic sector. Yeah. And so we need to resource it.
How will the changes impact the day-to-day teaching and learning processes at these polytechnics?
We've got some of the most amazing members. We've got some incredible people who work in the polytechnic sector across the whole country. And so they're going to do their best to make sure that students actually don't notice what's going on with the kind of the best intention. We obviously hope that students are involved, that they have their own avenues to have a say. But I really trust that we have educationalists in the room and support staff who will make sure that that over the next 6 weeks, students continue to get that great experience that they expect and that they should get.
Okay. So the last question I have for you is, how will the reforms impact student support services such as counselling, career advice and academic support?
You know, I think that is a really good question, and it's one of those where the devil's in the detail. The proposal doesn't talk enough specifics. And when we hear that there are areas where there could be some cost cutting, or that it may be within regional delivery, our concern is that those areas where there's been such a need, and it's always a growing need to have good student support services to ensure students are actually getting, that we all go through a tough time in our, you know, late teens and early 20s as we're studying. And so there's so much that's going on in our own lives, and we need those support services to be able to ensure that we're supported during that time. And I am unsure how this government is focusing on what's needed in that area. Te Pukenga has over many years tried to increase those support services, or had some consideration for them, which has been a good thing. But what we often find is that when there's a reduction in staff, the current staff just have more on their plate to do. And so you'll have the teachers will have more pastoral care they'll have to undertake, instead of being able to send it to the right avenues. And obviously that's not good for the teachers. It's also not good for the students. They need specialist support. And so it's one of those key areas of focus. And in fact, that's one of the great areas for students to really be able to talk to and campaign on and say, well, we need this. We need to make sure we're supported. We need to make sure we're looked after while we undergo our training anywhere in the country. So there's always hope, but we do need to do our best as a union and as any other collective group to make sure that we partake in any decision-making processes, that we put a stand and that we represent who we need to represent.
Well, thank you very much. And thank you very much, Daniel, for taking the time to talk to us. If you could just stay on the line, I'm just going to do a wee outro and I'll talk to you soon. That was Daniel Bensingu of the Tertiary Education Union talking to us about the reforms going over at Te Pukenga. And up next for you, I've got Tessellations by Offbeat Cowboy, and then I'll have the news coming up for you. Thank you.
R1 News at 1 with a forecast.
Welcome back to Radio 1 News. I'm your host, Charlie, and this is the weather. And if you look outside, it's, as you probably suspect, living in Dunedin winter, it's cold. It is currently 10.9 degrees, which I'm a little bit iffy about, but hey, that's what it's telling me. And if the sunset tonight sounds like a bit of you, that will be around 5:42. So head off to the beach with your flatmates, have a wee break. And yeah, thank you for listening to the weather.
The R1 News at 1 with a forecast.
And thank you for listening to R1 News today. Today has been Thursday, the 8th of August, and this has been our show. I'm your host, Charlie. Thank you very much for listening.
You've been listening to R1 News at 1, here on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. The R1 News is uploaded daily wherever you get your podcasts, or head to r1.co.nz/news to get yourself all caught up. Additionally, you can follow R1 News NZ to keep up to date with all our newsworthy happenings.
You know I hate the oversharing, the future's still is scary. I'm that trauma buried, that might be white, blind, and green. Things I get.
Thanks for listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. There are heaps more at r1.co.nz.